Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are just 9 minutes into the hour of four. So as usual, Monday to Friday, we're here to keep you company wherever you find yourself. And we have to thank you for tuning in. And let's talk about money today. You know, Dwight, what's up?
I'm cool, man. I'm cool. Where's our listeners? How are you guys doing? Hope you guys have been okay with this Wednesday. I don't make any particular sort of like police and teachers jokes like Helmut. Not that Helmut makes jokes.
Thank you for bringing that part up.
In defense of Helmut, he doesn't make jokes. He just somehow makes a shout out to you guys. And you guys have to ask me, what's so special about the shouting out?
I know, right?
Helmut, why do you shout out?
Look, I've never been thanked yet.
Thanked.
Yeah. And to be fair, well, they didn't ask for my shout out. So it's a, 50-50. So,
50-50. What are we doing? Yeah. But okay, yes.
Yeah. Okay. When I hear the word, today's discussion is going to be based on financial inclusion. And this is based on the NSA NAMFISA initiatives that are basically putting in place to bring about that financial inclusion.
Yeah.
The reason why I'm not getting into the definition is I want to point out the first thing that comes in my head when I say, how to put this? The way that the phrase financial inclusion is interpreted in my head is I easily link it to employment creation and make sure money in the pocket of everyone, affordability, create initiatives, opportunities, whatever it is that you want to call it, to give people access to finance.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, having read through the whole thing, it turns out, the whole discussion around financial inclusion leans more into the distribution of the finances to making it much easier than creating opportunity to give people access to finance. And it sort of like makes my head spin is what I'm saying, because when the phrase financial inclusion is pointed out, is said by someone, when I'm reading it somewhere, the first thing that comes in my head is are we including some kind of sovereign wealth fund of some sort? It turns out no. It's expanding our digital infrastructure to make sure that there is ease of making payment and transactions and all that. And like, look, I'm not saying.
I'm pulling people through my teeth. I'm sorry, guys. I'm pulling people through my teeth because if you are speaking to someone,
yeah,
and you're not really, what's that thing Uncle Bona loves accusing us a lot of, which he in many cases is correct on. Sorry, Uncle Bona, that I'm borrowing your example here. Well, what's that? He keeps saying bunking education, but his explanation is always like, is this like you just throw the work and leave situation.
Yes, toss the grenade and bye bye.
Why are we using such reference? But okay.
Yeah.
That particular explanation that he gives there is one that also fits a lot for many of the engagements that I've gone to, specifically between the public sector and the rest of the country. For example, this is on no part, and I'm not defending the NSA, but this is on no part the fault of the NSA, but this is where some of the particular sort of like stories that, for example, engagements like what David told me about, because he went to this event last week.
Yeah.
David told me he asked a question there in terms of what do we define inclusion as? Are we defining it in terms of what you think as the NSA, the Bank of Namibia, because the Bank of Namibia was there present, and there was another one or two public entities, either a ministry or so. And he asked that question, under what condition, under whose definition of inclusion are we defining inclusion? Are we saying, just because we've got systems in place, It looks,
you know, you have speed points, you know.
You have ATMs.
Yeah.
You said I you know.
You have your electronic wallets.
I switched on a piece of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. But do you really go and ask the people on the ground, do you feel financially included? Because I believe you, me, that person will ask you, Avatadan. They'll ask you like that, Avatadan.
So we'll be back to the nuclear bill again.
Yeah. What does this do to my life? If we really did a true litmus test of what many of our public entities are claiming in their public spaces, in their spaces of the public, let me rather say that, in their spaces of the public where they, look, like I said, it's not an attack on the NSA. The NSA did their part. They're bringing
just gathering information.
Yeah.
And
they're just,
you know,
polishing it for us. And they're just making sense of
it. We take it from there.
And then they announce the report. It's up to you, the Namibian, to read the report, the definitions associated to the report, and then make your particular deductions.
And actually, it's made public for that.
Yeah, for that reason.
Constructive criticism, or, you know, or you can say, okay, now this was excellent work, or you can say, we can do better, or you can ask any question in relation to that report. Yeah.
Exactly, Amo. Because let's, for example, look at a scale of an example.
Mm-hmm.
A scale of an example, because the 2023 census report stunningly brought a reality to the forefront that many of us were confronted. Remember, Elizabeth, the matriarch, that day that the report came out, you and I, back in 2024, we dissected the report.
And then, the Labour for Survey.
No, the census report.
The census report.
Yeah,
okay.
Back in 2024.
Yeah.
And then later that night, when she came to do her show, she and I, we were she was busy just waiting for someone else to finish in the studio. But I was like still in the studio, still, you know, after hours, trying to sort out some particular planning. And then she and I had a discussion. And then I asked her, she made a claim during the period of the actual census recording of the survey in 2023 that, you know, apparently one of the enumerators never showed up at their property at where she stays in Pioneers Park.
Yeah.
And then I asked her, how is that possible? I mean, did they not even leave a note to say, call us when you are back? Because that's what some of the enumerators are empowered to do. They leave you, it looks like a little form, but it's actually a note that they stick to your gate to say, we didn't count you yet. We missed you probably when you were not here or when you were here. Please contact us on this particular time frame and win a number and so on and so forth, so that we can, as enumerators, come and basically assess whether you are. And Helmut, it was such a harmless exercise. It's a harmless exercise. And yes, of course, there are those opportunity takers, like the asset forfeiture guys who believe that they are always clever. In many cases, you can see that they are just being absolutely the opposite of clever. Not calling them dumb, but in some cases, you know, they are taking their risks. So, in many scenarios, you could argue that people were not safe. They didn't like, you know, they don't like this physical showing up at your property campaign, but this is the thing that Namibia wants for Namibia's planning. And we as Namibians, we have to make certain particular compromises.
Yeah.
Because if the state wants to know what services can be brought to you, you've got to be there to answer just a basic survey.
Attend.
Just attend. Look, we know it's not elections, but when it comes to a census, we've got to know how much water needs to be,
Not elections.
It's not elections. Because
for that, we show up for some reason.
No, we didn't. Last year's elections, the local authority.
Oh, no, that one was terrible.
Which is the stark example, Helmut, in terms of how we even understand this actual decision-making and you know, the actual power that the everyday citizen owns. So, in the broader sense of looking at a national activity, in with regards to like a census, which is based upon how much resources can be committed to the growing population of Namibia, everybody should have put up their hand and say, hey, listen, come count me. I'm going to be at home.
Yeah.
Ek is hier. You know, let's have that discussion. Even if it's just you having the discussion at the gate, you giving that enumerator who's been walking up and down your street the whole day a glass of water through the gate. You don't want the person to come into your yard. It's okay. No one cares what activity you're conducting in your personal property. Just, not to borrow the tagline that the NSA had, just be counted. Now, we fast forward to 2026, 2 years later. Now, much of these stats, you know it, but I'll just remind our listeners for the sake of this. Much of these stats are stats that the NSA extrapolates from the census report. Because they already sit with the data. So they just keep on extracting.
Yeah.
And then they just keep, you know, basically, you know, making deductions and inferences from the known particular scenarios. But for this matter, they say here, and I'm starting with the statement that came out that day in last week. It was a report that was conducted, because it's a 2025 report. It was conducted in terms of the Statistics Act, and it helps to provide evidence of the state of financial inclusion in Namibia to inform policy development and decision making. Now, for the better part of this, first and foremost, look at the NSA as a messenger, as a massive messenger.
In other words, don't shoot the messenger.
Don't shoot the messenger. Don't throw bricks. Don't hurl insults. Don't even think of any naughty or devious thoughts about the messenger. The messenger is just carrying on the message. So, they looked at people that were from the ages of 15 and upwards, obviously residing in private households across the country.
Yeah.
That particular target population that they also cite there makes things very tricky because is a traditional authority's communal land area designated as private land? Helmut?
Isn't it communal?
No, I'm asking you, because there are households on that, those property, on those pieces of land.
Yeah.
And is that private, or is that...
I think a private would entail that each and every single one of those ervin is with the deeds registry's office on the name of the individual that's occupying that
property.
That's what private...
Which, yes, the understanding you and I... Certainly.
Yeah, otherwise...
But
yeah,
you,
otherwise
but you
then,
and I know what happens in communal land areas. It's you go ask a headman, and the headman says, "Hey, Dwight, I like you. You and your wife can settle down there." Just to find out when I pass away 5 years from now, you know, the headman wants to send his little cousins and say, "Listen, go act like gremlins and confiscate the property because guy I had the agreement with no longer is alive."
That's assuming James Sankwasa doesn't show up before you
die. On a communal land area, Jay. Do you know what's the worst part? It's actually a good thing. It's actually a good thing. Remember with regards, it wasn't with you, but with David a little bit earlier. But in relation to our discussion yesterday, David showed me a lovely scenario of once again how our government is acting or operating in silos. So Minister Sankwasa has urban and rural development. That's his portfolio, which is urban and rural communities and settlements. But do you know which rural communities are not under his particular purview?
Yeah.
Communal land areas, traditional authorities. Traditional leaders
report
directly to the president, or they engage directly with the president. The communal land boards that come from those traditional authorities are established with the Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah.
Do you see the disconnect? The operation in silo. But this particular line of communication that connects into Minister of Agriculture has everything to do with Ministry of Urban and Rural Development. Because the word rural exists in that name.
Yeah. You can actually see the irony when you put it that way, that you have the Ministry of Rural and Urban and Rural Development. And you have a communal land board and a communal portion of the country's land. And the two sort of like barely work with each other in terms of in terms of initiative execution.
Yeah.
Because now if the rural part, I think obviously if it's not mostly than not, is used in reference to, you know, it's used to villages, and more often these areas fall under the jurisdiction of traditional authorities.
Yes, and when you look at rural, what you just now qualified, Helmut, yeah. what you just now satisfied and qualified, when you look at that particular definition, why does it sound superbly the purview or under the particular responsibility of the Ministry of Urban and Rural Development? Why did we make things so messy for ourselves?
That's one fascinating.
How do we equate the activity of agriculture to communal land areas? But we've got rural communities living in those communal land areas in urban and rural development.
That's one of those things that, every time that I think I feel like I've acquired enough knowledge about how the Namibian central government operates with its,
then we surprise ourselves. You and I get surprised.
Every day I'm surprised. And I would say I'm surprised in a good way because every time I come to learn about something new about, how different responsibilities that seems to be overlapping.
Yeah.
Given to different entities. And what I'm fascinated by is, how they coordinate, if ever, because one thing that we've seen that has also been pointed out, thankfully by the Office of the Auditor General is the fact that you have public entities have a tendency of working in silos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, every time that I discover, seemingly overlapping responsibilities and roles being played by either different SOEs or ministries, what I'm fascinated by is how they coordinate in terms of, of initiative execution, if they do that at all, which it would be fascinating to see.
Yeah.
Just take one of the most obvious one, building a school, for example.
Yeah.
Yeah. The money part of that obviously will have to come from the Minister of Finance. A budget allocation, every ministry is given money. That's no brainer. And then what comes out of that is, that school, construction activities has to take place.
Yeah.
Now for construction activities, now we are in the construction activities. Now that means, you need bricks and you need land. Now, actually, that's the first thing that you need. You need land. Now when you start talking about land, that's not the ministry, this is a school. And the Minister of Education is not in charge of that. Mm-hmm. The Minister of Finance is not in charge of that. Yeah. When you acquire this land and you have to set up a structure,
yeah.
you need water and electricity connectivity. These are two different ministries.
Yeah. But let's say those two ministries are involved.
Yeah.
The education, what was the other one? Education and?
Environment.
Yeah, let's say the two of them are involved and it's still a communal land area. And the traditional authority, like we heard, you remember the lack of what you and I deduced from the report on the Uis lithium illegal mining.
Oh, yeah.
The lack of communication.
Yep.
Right?
And the sad thing about that lack of communication is that it's starting from the traditional authority level and it's going straight to the Minister of Mines and Energy.
Yeah, but it doesn't go down to the ground level.
It doesn't go straight to the
people who are the Namibians.
Yeah, look, what you're looking at here is, I'm glad there's an entire, standing committee parliamentary report on this because that shows, that is a game of broken telephone 101.
101, yeah.
Yeah, because you have the Minister of Mines. That is supposed to oversee all these, mining activities.
Yeah.
And, the environment, so the Minister of Mines and, Mines and Energy have the Minister of Environment and you have, they're supposed to coordinate to ensure that the rehabilitation and extractive everything is started and ended in a proper way, both environmentally and legally and technically, whatever it is. But the thing is, what you see there is, the fact that new companies
had to, you know, found themselves, you know, at odds with the, you know, with the residents of that area because of the, you know, of giant pits that were left by the previous operator.
But you keep describing those holes as other things every time.
Yeah, huge.
Last time they went like big holes. Yeah. Now it's giant pits.
Yeah.
What's it going to be next week?
Well, stay tuned.
Cavities.
Now, what you see there is, what that shows is, it brings up a lot of questions, which includes whose responsibility was it to make sure that the company that was operating there before the two, you know, before the two companies that, that actually, you know, started off on a wrong foot with the resident, you know, with the residents, whose responsibility was it to make sure that they carried out their decommissioning process?
Mm.
That's where the questions begin. And when it comes to the beginning now, and you can also, I think, you know, point a few fingers to the two, you know, to the two entities that went there for the operation.
Yeah.
I feel like they should have raised that issue with the ministry. I'm not sure if they did because it's not pointed out in the report.
Yeah.
They should have raised that issue with the, you know, that issue with either the traditional authorities or the ministries that, you know what, we're here to operate, but they're already, you know, like, you know, unrehabilitated parts of this land. So we don't want anyone to come and start blaming us over what we didn't, you know, or, you know, all the holes we didn't dig.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that. And then you have the miscommunication now that's coming from the, you know, from the, between the traditional authority and the people on the ground. You have the, you know, you have miscommunication or game of broken telephone coming all the way from the ministry down to the traditional authorities. And now the people found themselves at odds with the company.
And the companies. And the companies technically were not the guys. Okay, they were responsible for meeting with the public engagement in terms of what?
In terms of?
What's that workshop that I went to last week with the legal expert, the person from LSE explained. Because Namibia makes a stipulation for public consultation.
Yeah.
So we make a stipulation, for example, like in some of the acts, that public consultation or public inputs are required.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to see that every time when these public consultations happen, and like the one that I went to, the nuclear one, two weeks back, where the one lady asked, why are we here? And Mr. Axel Dibanyane cited, because in our laws of Namibia, we emphasize with inputs from you guys as residents, citizens, electorate, whatever label you want to use for whichever context, you guys need to be aware of what your government is developing, which is a very noble and a good cause. Now, here's the next warning. Okay. The next warning speaks towards, for example, the, like that broken telephone situation.
Yeah.
Or like what the NSA basically reports in their activities. Now, Helmut, remember last year, you and I looked at I'm still on the statement itself, but one of the motivations why they did this exercise was
the NSA report or the
NSA statement on this thing.
Okay.
That fourth paragraph on the statement on page one. They mentioned here the Namibia Financial Sector Transformation Strategy. Remember, we looked at it last year. And the transformation strategy was about how to take Namibia's financial sector, you know, to new heights by the Bank of Namibia. Let me speak in a correction. That was another strategy, that other strategy of last year. Because here the NSA says this will inform the implementation. So it is the same. It is the same strategy. Yeah, it is the same strategy. Now, the interesting thing is, this strategy was unveiled last year for the next 10 years. And the NSA first had to do the financial inclusion activity to inform. Why could we not do, okay, this technically would have been a budgeting issue, technically. But why couldn't this technically be extrapolated from, you know, be an exercise that would have also been considered within the scope of the census? That's also a little bit after the fact in terms of asking that question. Because you can already see through activity the financial inclusion activity that they cite here, what they is. 86% of the Namibian population from 15 years of age upwards
have access to financial instruments or activities and can interact with these financial instruments and so forth. And this is an increase from the 78% back in 2017. You can also infer in that scenario probably is that people became older and they started having, you know, salaries and, you know, fixed incomes, whereas 2017 probably things were not as rosy. How would you like laughing there? But you know it's a fact. You know it's a fact. So
I'm laughing so I don't do the opposite of that.
And what is also interesting is specifically that we've got, now that I think of it, yeah, this is the strategy that was launched last year by the Bank of Namibia. Yeah, it is. Because I remember from last year's planner, we had it on our menu and we looked at it because there was a specific report, a strategy document. Remember that? And it was a massive, nice, well-designed document. Yeah. Anyway, digressing. I'm digressing. So this exercise obviously now lets the next 10 years take fruit. But here's the thing, Hamid, that's currently in the pipeline. And this is where things get a little bit interesting. And this is our next discussion. I think we've got to pursue that discussion tomorrow. It's the EIDs, the electronic or digital IDs.
Oh, yeah, that. Okay. I saw the EIDs thing, and I think we have been having this discussion for a while.
Yeah.
And I believe one of my very beautiful wives already have one. But the thing is...
Guys.
I had to point that out so I'm not seeing...
I hope the camera was on Helmut during that time and not just on me. Is it just on me the whole time?
Thank God it was on you.
Please repeat that sentence, Helmut. Show them the facial expression you just made.
I believe one of my very beautiful wives already have one. Already have one of those IDs.
Yes, but, I don't know what who's promised to Helmut.
But the thing is the thing is if you were really in a type of a relationship that you really are proud of and you you go around telling people that and the next day you get dumped. Hell, okay, now good luck explaining that.
Must have a good story. We can't.
I'm a comedian. Well, it's about compare and contrast.
We can't just be bad news bears every day. Know that.
What I want to know is there a difference between the electronic IDs and the digital IDs? Because I keep thinking thinking about it in terms of the difference between the physical hard SIM card that I have in my phone and the electronic ones or the eSIM cards that we keep being told to go and get.
So, to me,
yeah,
because I was listening to 2 weeks back when Gran had that particular. Because they also, I had to do an opportunity cost between do I go to this event or do I go to another event?
Yeah.
But at the same time, that I went to the nuclear public engagement, Gran then had the discussion on this digital or EID discussion. Now, you technically can assume that they are the same thing and probably. In some cases, they vary. Reason being, for example, is if you use the word E, which technically is a shortened version of electronic, but if you say electronic...
If you say digital, I'm thinking something else.
Yeah, you could think something else, but I specifically want to start from a discussion from where Namibia's perspective starts from. Now, here's the thing. This EID, the Ministry of Home Affairs cited that it's a card that you get. And it'll contain a chip in it. Not just the interactive digital component that, for example, that President Geingob launched back in 2023. Remember when he went and stood on the border with Botswana and his counterpart?
Yeah, I remember that.
Masisi. What was Botswana's president before Duma? Before Boko? Duma Boko? Who was the president? Something Masisi. No?
Yeah.
So him and Masisi were standing on the border. Remember that they had that iconic photo where President Geingob said, listen.
Yeah, when they were talking about, using those, digitally, more like a chipped IDs, basically.
Yeah.
That will work with like some kind of a barcode.
But it was the biometric passport. One.
Yeah, thank you. That's the word, biometric one.
The express term they used there was biometric.
Yeah.
Now, the new ID, not this EID, that ID that President Kainko basically unveiled was launched the previous year, 2022, where him and the former First Lady Kainkos, where they both were issued with their own versions of this, of these IDs. But at that stage, because I remember I was at State House when that particular activity was launched, and at that scenario, I did not know that it would build up to the Botswana engagement. Because this technically meant that immigration would just need a scan gun, you know, that digital reader. Because your ID has most a barcode on it. Yeah. So they would just need a scan gun, and then that scanner would just scan that barcode of your ID.
Yeah, to verify your identity.
So now I thought this would have been a soft copy version of something that you keep somewhere. It's not a physical card that you've got. But now to hear and to see that technically it's a discussion of it can, and well, the first explainer that exists, for example, is that, and I don't like using these AI explainers, but yeah. Apparently, a digital ID is not the same as an electronic ID card.
Which will make sense.
Yeah, this is explained by the platform samsub.com, where they basically indicate that an electronic ID is only one possible form of digital identity, and the two terms are not interchangeable. So I can't even apply digital and electronic, you know, interchangeably in an explanation.
Yeah, look, that's why I keep thinking about it in terms of this, you know, the physical SIM card and the eSIM. Which now, gives you a lot of confusion because, when it comes to, you know, when it comes to SIM cards, one thing that I've come to learn at least is that you have the physical, hard SIM card, which contains a chip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like a.
And that's a digital one.
That's basically what we have turned our ID, you know, what we want to turn our IDs, especially for use in, you know, with neighboring countries like we are trying to implement with Botswana.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the digital one now. So I think the first mistake I made was trying to draw comparison to the, you know, to the physical SIM card and the eSIM card, because they're wildly different with what you're just describing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can use another example to help you with any listener. It's like the central bank digital currencies, the CDCs.
Yeah.
Central bank CBDCs. Yeah. CBDCs. The CBDCs. In essence, Helmut, if you go stand in front of your ATM and you punch in your PIN and you ask for a balance of your account, that thing that you are seeing is already digital. That's a digital representation of what is in your bank.
Definitely.
It is just an evolution from the Wild West scenarios. It's
literally
scenarios,
in digits.
The Wild West scenarios where you literally could go and stand in your bank. You know, you could stand in your bank and you ask, take me to my... you know, to my direct bank vault or whatever for my money. It's a direct, you know, evolution from that phase. That's where banking began.
Except now you don't have to walk into the bank to verify that the money that, you know, to verify the amount of money or to check you, to literally check your account balance. You can just do that electronically.
And even back in the 80s, Ahmed, do you know how they allowed, for example, like in Japan, they still use the system. They give you a book. It's like a little bank book. They call it a bank book. Yeah. The book doesn't have money in it. Anything you do in the book also does not cause you any harm if you lose the book. But this is a book that is issued to a bank account holder, for example, in Japan, where you can look at in this book, because you go every time to your bank and ask them, what's the status of my bank account?
It's like a ledger.
It's thick. Yeah, it's like a ledger. And this is also how some of the formats of banking had evolved through.
Yeah.
Now, a CBDC is just a little bit different in terms of let's say, that digital representation of on the screen of the ATM where you're standing. a CBDC is literally, in another way, how your central bank basically wants to take the idea of money and technically make it an element of digital code to such an extent. Because currently right now, if you look at that representation on a ATM screen of your bank account balance, that is just a record of what's in your bank account.
Yeah.
But it's all digital. It's all digital. It's all electronic. But a CBDC now is literally taking that light signal that you're looking at, which is a record of what you're supposed to have, and technically making it to another particular digital realm specifically where it adopts the, what's that technology for cryptocurrencies? The technology at the heart of it, the ledger technology?
What?
Blockchain.
Where now
they take blockchain to another level on, you know, to work for the benefit specifically of central banks. But here's the thing, Helmut. You and I know there's already a trusted system running in the economy as it is today.
Yeah. Meaning,
you just show up with your bank card or with cash on in you, and if you see the product you like, you can pay for it. And then they give you a receipt to say, Dwight paid for this thing.
Yeah.
But Dwight doesn't need the receipt because Dwight already has the product.
Yeah.
It's just more for that business's bookkeeping purposes that they have to issue a receipt because they need that receipt to go and show the Ministry of Finance and NAMRA, we sold so much units, we made so much money, this is our profit, this is how much we sold, this is how much we paid in salaries, this is how much we paid for other taxes and services, this is our activity based upon around our activity. What is our activity? To make money selling a good or a service. But this is the amount of activities that we support in the broader landscape of Namibia. What's my tax bill going to be? It's based on an accounting principle. Now, I'm showing you the accounting principle. I understand what a CBDC tries to be. It tries to be because if you look at it in hindsight, 2 years back, Helmut, I was thinking CBDCs are, you know, they're the hip and happening thing. But then you go slow down. You go like, oh, wait, this is a waste of effort by our central bank. This is a waste of effort. Do you know why it's a waste of effort?
Mm-hmm.
Because, Helmut, there's a whole bunch of people who believe a cryptocurrency is the new thing. It is not the new thing.
You know what's my favorite part when it comes to that discussion? Look, I get the whole, you know, that at the center of financial inclusion discussion is, which I have to say I'm, you know, a little disappointed. Because when I had, you know, at least in the beginning, earlier on, let me just say I think it was last year when I basically started looking, you know, taking interest into these subjects.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You know, to this day, every time that the phrase financial inclusion is mentioned, I swear I'm thinking about sovereign wealth fund.
I'm thinking about basic income grant.
Exactly. That's where my mind is racing to those two.
Because our conversations, the more and more we speak about it, our conversations keep pointing towards, how do you avoid like the FAO's report of food security and nutrition.
Yeah.
How do you avoid food insecurity? Do people have money?
Okay, here's the irony. You know, we are, first of all, we are at the top of countries that are economically unequal.
Mm.
So that means that the wealth distribution is there's a very wide gap between those who can afford bologna and those who can barely afford brown bread. Now, and
the way you say bologna, bruh. But at least you're not saying it like the Americans, bologna.
Bologna?
I have to go look at, where is the B in bologna? And then you realize, oh, they're just saying it incorrectly.
So it's just bologna.
It's bologna. You're right.
No.
Even though you're Africanizing bologna, you know, you're right.
I'm so proud of you.
Or do you want me to say kabango nice?
That's even better. Now, here's the thing. So you have economic inequality, unemployment going through the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have, seemingly ever worsening, global economic and political atmosphere. So, and you have, youth unemployment. So the access to finance is proving to be tricky by the day.
Mm.
So, that means, but despite all these issues, and the issues are so bad that, we are talking about, we're talking about legislating people's expenditure. I mean, at the meeting that the Minister of Finance and Namfisa had and the judiciary guy, that's the funniest meeting ever. Mm-hmm. Because, they were just trying to figure out how to keep money in the pockets of Namibians, because mm-hmm. we seem to be, overspending pretty much. And then, because of that overspending, we are borrowing more. And the financial institutions.
Man, are you talking about the spending by government?
No, individuals. Yes. When Minister of Finance and Namfisa met, they were not talking about the government budget. They were talking about
But they were talking about. Thank you. Okay, but first finish your points. First.
Now, what they were looking at is the financial institution that offer financial services. There's that term that's used, microlenders. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it very easy for financial lending institutions especially microlenders?
Mm.
Why do they, from the look of things, don't do a lot of due diligence? At least that's the word that was used. When they approached for financial assistance by a civil servant.
Yeah.
It's because of the guarantee of the source of their income.
Yeah.
So, that's where the guys from the judiciary or the Minister of Finance, the judiciary or the Minister of Justice, of saying, look, you can only, or was that Namfisa who said, look, you can only regulate so far.
Mm.
Regulation is going to go until a certain point where individual financial responsibility will have to take over from there, going the other side.
Mm.
Otherwise, then, if you just push the regulation line, now you're just traversing the line between regulating and invasion of privacy.
Mm.
So, these are the financial, strains that we find ourselves, forget as a country, but as individuals.
Yeah.
And then now my favorite joke of last week. Let's split the salary in half and pay people twice a month. Now, we are caught in a tight financial corner here, but we feel like the best discussion to have is how to make money move more conveniently.
And that's the reason why our hypothesis.
First, we have to get the money, and then talk about how we're gonna move it more conveniently.
That's why. Our hypothesis for today started from how inclusive does this technique, how inclusive actually is this exercise? Because how much you can give a 5-year-old a $5 and you can claim right there on the spot, this person is inclusive. This person is included, is financially included. Because I initiated the action of giving the $5 down that way to the 5-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Nah? But you and I know that the 5-year-old can't work because we've got anti-child labor laws. Namibia is part of that particular convention of children's labor.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of other jazz and chocolate mousse cake scenarios happening right there. Not that I like chocolate mousse cakes, just letting you know, it's actually one of the few confectionery goods that I don't like. Now, when we view this particular discussion, Helmut, we are still one of those highly unequal countries, just letting you know. Here's the graphic. This is the World Bank. The maroon or the red is unequal. The blue is less unequal.
You know, I thought Africa has it bad. So South America is even worse.
It's us and whole of Sub-Saharan Africa.
The whole of Sub-Saharan Africa and the entire South America.
For some reason, Gabon is not. And for some reason, is that Malawi and... that's Malawi. Yeah, for some reason, Malawi is apparently not unequal. I don't know how that's possible.
But yeah, the whole of sub-Saharan Africa. So we're drawing a line from Cameroon.
Makes sense.
Central African Republic, and that, I think that looks like South Sudan, all the way down.
Now, okay, now, you see my point why I have this, at least, you know, personal point of view of how about we just figure out how to work out the cost of living?
Yeah.
Yeah, because when, and every time, okay, what's the very easy conclusion to reach when we talk about food insecurity? Is that, well, we have the food. In a country, there is food.
Yeah.
But the means of accessing the food, which is the money, it's the one that is the missing piece of this equation.
Yeah.
And for some reason, we decided to call it food insecurity. I think we should rename that to financial insecurity.
Yes. You are right, Helmut. You get your 5 imaginary brownie points.
Thank you.
Top marks. Top notch analysis. Right there. Because you narrow it down.
Bumba will be here knocking.
Who? Bumba. That president will beat us up, Helmut. If he finds out that we are using his label here, free Willy, he will show up and say, I will send you an invoice. But yeah, you were still saying.
Yeah. Now, I understand, I understand that, the definition or more like the emphasis and priorities of the current discussion around financial inclusion is not the one that, it's not the one that I first had in mind. And I found a very nice article from the World Bank that sort of like, explains that. Financial inclusive is about making money move more efficiently. And we all know that the more money moves, the more an economy is boosted, which is a good idea.
Yeah.
Now, here's one thing that they point out. Financial inclusion, inclusive finance drives growth and resilience, yet 1.4 billion adults globally remain unbanked. So you need financial institutions to, to help the money move faster and also keep it secure. So it has, a fast movement of finances for all kinds of economic activities, which is a brilliant idea. And when you talk about financial institutions and banking, the first aspect of, that a lot of us think of it is the safety components that comes with storing, with not storing your money under the mattress, which is a brilliant idea. Now, the one thing they point out is digital financial services cuts cost and expand access. So you don't have to walk around with a stack of cash and ending up losing all your life savings. So it's safe in some vault somewhere, but it's not in a vault. It's reinvested. So it's the whole banking, method of operation. So digital financial services cut cost and expand access, but they also pose consumer and cyber risk. The World Bank Group supports emerging and developing economies to harness digital financial services responsibly through policy, lending, and investment. All these are very brilliant idea, but my question is, yes, we can manage money. It's like me showing up to my family members and explaining to them how a car works and how to drive when I don't have one. Because, their question will be, thank you very much. Now we know what a steering wheel looks like. We know what the gears do and all this. Actually, at this point, I feel like I can assemble and disassemble an engine, but do you have a car?
Yes or no?
No. Then,
do you have a license? Yes or no?
No. Now, then why are we having this conversation? I know a car will get me from point A to point B very fast, but do you have one? About that, and with, that's when you start hearing politicians answering those questions with using a typical political. The first thing they are most likely to say is, "Thank you very much for asking that question. That's a very nice question and it's a very important question." Bro is thinking, definitely thinking. He doesn't have an answer.
No, because it hits it on the nail specifically.
So financial inclusion. Excellent idea, but the question that I genuinely want to know is, we don't have the money. We have all this type of money move mechanism. We have all kinds of easies and blues of moving money.
Mm.
And And by the way, all regional blocks, SADC, ECOWAS, and all, they're all working on the regional one. Now, that one, you know, on their own.
Why does it sound like people are just doing things because it sounds trendy?
It's peer pressure.
You think it's peer pressure?
Uh-huh.
To me, it sounds trendy.
Oh, so it's
look,
something that's...
Look, in the movie scenario...
that makes it sound worse.
No, because it sounds worse than a Gen
Z
trend.
You make it sound like we're a bunch of juveniles.
No, because it does look like a Gen Z trend. But when you go and interrogate the system, you go and interrogate the logic. It's like one of our other particular scenarios that we also realized that even the IPPR keeps saying about, not to highlight or, you know, blow their horn, is... It seems like we're coming with first world ideas to third world developing scenarios, thinking that the first world idea immediately solves the third world problem, but the third world problem technically needs what the first world levels basically work through. You gradually work through your issues. You make things, you tailor things for yourself.
Yeah.
You don't go and lick all, you know, all envelopes saying, I just posted everything. Yes, I'm now successfully achieved or successfully you know, envelope licking certificate of higher grade learning, you know, in Dwight's University of absolutely no value. No, Helmut.
Remember when we flew to South Korea for something that would have been an email?
For PowerPoint presentations.
Yeah, like, I feel like, it's either we enjoy traveling, which, I do enjoy traveling, believe me.
Mm.
You know, it's a beautiful thing.
Mm.
But, the point you just made about us, seemingly adopting developed, countries types of initiatives and, maybe it's just because it's trending and say, you know, let's just implement it here and, you know, let's just fly with it. Maybe, you know, make ourselves look fancy. And the problem is, it's now cascading in our problem. We have started having first world problems, aka, you know, speed hump.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you see, now that's part of the problem. And the initiatives, for me, the procedure is supposed to be have initiatives and implement them that, you know, that decreases that wide gap of economic inequality, which clearly we're still in the red zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. How are we, I mean, because if you ask me, that is what we should be dealing with first. The SADC, anti-corruption representatives, when they met up, was that last month or earlier, earlier this month, one thing they talked about was, illicit financing is a big problem in the bloc. And yesterday, that's what Gatete pointed out at the ongoing 49th session of the African Union guys in Addis Ababa. Illicit financing.
The one that's ongoing in this week.
It started yesterday. I think it's ended today because I looked at it.
No, I think it started on Monday.
Oh, really?
There is something that I kept seeing besides the Pan African Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Who, for some reason, Namibia,
oh, man.
Our speaker, Wendon said yesterday there in the Pan African, if I had the power, yes. I'm like, brah, what are you saying? And guess what? Guess what was their assignment as a standing committee in the PAP?
What was that?
To look at the Sudan civil war.
Oh.
And I spoke here with David just before the show, just a little while earlier, and David said, you know, things are tricky in the rest of Africa.
Yeah.
And now you come from a super peaceful country like Namibia. And here's the tricky thing, Hamid. It seems like we Namibians, when we show up at the Pan-African Parliament level, which us Namibians in Southern Africa, alongside the other Southern Africans, when we show up at this platform, we've got an air to us. Now, I remember it started way back in 2020 or 2021, specifically 2021, when a handful of our, I won't mention names because I know definitely they'll be listening to the show, but they got into some serious debates, and the guys that were sort of like supporting them was Malema from EFF, because he was at that stage also in that session of 2021's PAP. And the situation that happened there was that there was a clear chasm that formed. There was a clear canyon. I'll use the Namibian Canyon because it's the biggest after the Grand Canyon of the US.
Yeah.
It was a clear fissure of a canyon formation taking place between Southern Africa, who can boast and brag about being stable every time when there's a transition of power.
Yeah.
Because majority of us don't suffer such particular ailments in terms of transition of power. I mean, even look at what the former DRC president did, Joseph Kabila. Kabila handed over to an opposition party leader, to Tshisekedi. Tshisekedi was not from his party. Kabila literally said, I don't want to be president anymore. I'm handing over to you. You, the leader of that other party.
Let's see what you can do with this whole thing.
And now you can just assume that Monsieur Kabila is probably just kicking it back and having a whole bunch of, you know, martinis and you know, other drinks that have exotic names. And just enjoying life as a post-presidential individual.
Yeah.
But we can brag to the rest of the continent. We are the most peaceful. Do you know what's currently happening in Tunisia? What's that guy, that president that they've got, Saeed? The guy that was a former professor?
Yeah.
Former political science professor. No, he was a former law professor. So, Helmut, let me tell you the funny story, because I watched the whole documentary. The funny story from that thing was that it all started before COVID, and Saeed picked up prominence during COVID. Now, Saeed was a nobody in terms of the political influence circles of Tunisia's political landscape.
Yeah.
And Saeed started looking like this, the sure bet of a sane voice in the sea of political insanity for Tunisia. Saeed becomes president, and then Saeed, he's an academic who specializes in Tunisian law.
Yeah.
And then he starts unbundling and, you know, winding down and disempowering legal processes in the country.
That's dangerous.
He brought in a law dissolving the parliament. He brought in a law making having a political party as an organization in its existence. Meaning political opposition,
mm-hmm.
as a law. He said it's literally a crime.
To have an opposition?
To have political parties, or opposition political parties, mm-hmm. is a crime.
Ooh.
Now, the opposition parties, many of their main leaders, or their main voices, or their main faces, are either facing treason charges, which means they would be locked up for extensive amounts of time.
Yeah.
Or they are being continuously harassed.
Isn't that just a very shrewd way of cracking down a political dissent?
Yeah. He tries to disempower the judiciary of Tunisia. The man is an academic.
That's a sign.
How does an academic go to full-blown, full-range? He's even, it sounds, what he's doing, because he's doing it in a conniving manner. He's doing it in a very intelligent manner.
Yeah, look, that's the dangerous part about social science majors.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you look at it, John Bolton is a lawyer, I think graduated from Harvard.
Yes.
I mean, Obama has like two advanced degrees in law. Columbia University and Harvard. And a lot of people in the political sphere in a lot of Western countries and Western influence like Namibia, you have a lot of humanity science majors that are dominating the political spectrum.
Mm.
I think that's one of those debates that you'll read a lot about the difference between Eastern and Western politics. And China is more often used as an example, where you have, like, You know, you have these science experts like engineers dominating the political spectrum in, you know, in Eastern countries, mostly in China. And you have the humanities and science experts mostly dominating the political spectrum. And a lot of the debates that you will find on platforms like Reddit in relation to this subject, one thing they point out is it perhaps this is the core difference in terms of implementation of initiatives and with regards to time frame. Of implementation of initiatives between the East and West, because in China they will talk about a bridge today and start building it tomorrow.
Yeah, because they identify a need.
Yeah.
And then they say, so the reason why we identify this bridge is needed is because there's a need, there's a remote village living up there.
Yeah.
We need to connect them to the economy.
Access. Yeah, exactly. We need to connect them. And they are more into, you know, their entire line of work is into implementing, not talking.
Mm.
And you have one side where that basically has it, you know, like the complete opposite, where, you know, would rather sit and have that philosophical idea. What is to sit? And we spend 5 years talking about what is to sit before
what is the action of sitting.
What is the action
and how,
of
sitting? And how has the chair evolved? In the oh my goodness. But you know, it's exactly what you're highlighting because, man, I'm still traumatized from that workshop of last week. So, I told you most last week what on Thursday, the argument I had with one of the facilitators of the workshop about the difference between, okay, here's the basis. The person claimed TikTok and YouTube are two different platforms. I tell the person, no, they're not two different platforms. They're the same platform. The person keeps saying, no, you're wrong, Brian. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Me and this person, we studied the same journalism degree. But when I ask you in terms of communications mediums or communications platforms, you can mention four. There's the print, there's broadcast, there's the internet, and then there is TV broadcast, and then radio broadcast, and then internet. Four platforms. Because it doesn't help, Helmut, you come and tell me Meta or Facebook is different from Twitter. I will tell you it's the same thing.
Okay, so from the look of things, the debate you're having is like saying, I think, that individual was looking at it, from my understanding, from a very technical point of view. It's like saying, you know, okay, aren't magazines and, newspapers somewhat, you know, the same medium?
They are part of the same medium.
Part of the same medium.
Yeah.
So,
but they are two different entities.
That's why I'm saying maybe that individual is looking at it from a technical point of view. Like, you know what, you are looking at it from, from the type of, from the type of videos in terms of length that each platform, takes.
The kinds of users.
Yeah, the type of users, ownership and all, and all those things. But the bottom line is, they are all on the internet.
They're all on the internet.
So.
They all rise from the same technology. Now, if we start things from such a major difference in terms of knowledge, you then ask the question in terms of, okay, so, and I'm taking this is a broad brush and as well as also a broad punch associated to the brush, you know, so I'm brushing and punching. No violence, please. We don't promote violence. So, when you look at, like, for example, how knowledge is understood by the everyday Namibian, right? Helmut, we have to greatly understand the role that, for example, mathematics plays in everyday life. Now, that one discussion I had the other day with David, also here in the studio, about how you need to look at running a business. And it's the same particular discussion I just now, before we came into studio, I quickly had a discussion with a friend of mine as well, where, you know, how people need to look at enterprises.
Yeah.
If you start a business yourself, a business is not your piggy bank. Let me say it again. A business is not your slash fund, slash
911 emergency,
slash
for me to tap into and dip my fingers in my whole fist and then just extract money as I want.
Yeah.
A business is another legal entity. A business needs to grow organically. Just like you grew organically when your parents invested money in you.
Yeah.
Né? Giving you food, clothing you, giving you a roof over your head. That's the same thing that you've got to treat, how you get to treat your enterprise when you started yourself.
Yeah.
Now, there's always this lovely example I keep using since, my second year in this journalism degree that I completed, in the entrepreneurship class with a guy that he's now working at. He was a fellow classmate, but he's now working at, what's the place's name? Well, anyway, besides that point. And then he had a business. Mm-hmm. Now the entrepreneurship lecturer was saying, guys, let's focus on the issue. Please don't, if you start a business, know it has its own responsibilities. It's not there to support your lifestyle. And then the guy frowned and I told him, yes, I concur. I was the only person saying, yes, I concur. Mm-hmm. And then he said, what do you mean by that, sir? And then the lecturer explained, but the lecturer didn't articulate it properly because he was also a PRO / his background / communications. Mm, of course. And this is a guy offering entrepreneurship with no particular business management or marketing qualification scenario. This lecturer of mine, he's a doctor per se. A doctor, as we say in Afrikaans. So, but I understood, you know, in terms of helping the doctor with his explanation, I had to chime in with my previous experience. I explained to the guy, in essence, your business is another thing. Not a living thing, but it's a legal thing because it can buy assets, own assets. It can dispose of assets dispose of assets. And it can make contracts in its name. But you can't just go and take money from it because that's not technically how it's supposed to be run in terms of like the more sanitized version of understanding organic growth of a business. And the guy frowned.
I mean, plus your shareholders are not going to be happy to know that that's how you conduct your business.
Yeah. And then the guy frowned. And I told him, yes, that's the business money is not your money.
Yeah.
And then he asked, now, how am I supposed to live? And then I said, bruh, then you're supposed to budget in that scenario of your business's lifespan. How are you going to get a salary as an owner? And then he even frowned even further. And then I knew he probably could not understand why his business folded.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't quite grasp in terms of, you know, longevity and business survival, you know, why did it fold? And then I gave him like a lowdown. Now, many people who have worked in like a money-making scenario of the private sector of Namibia, they understand business case survival. That's why when you look at political voices, just to help with your example that you gave a little bit earlier about the humanities in the Western influenced world of the world, and what the East of Asia primarily does in terms of how they approach problems, how they provide the solutions to the problems, and then everybody's lives move on.
Yeah, né? Is, and we thought PowerPoint will cut it.
Is look at Namibia case in point. Just look at Namibia case in point, and then Namibia in line with, let's for example say, with the US and with Europe, right? Mm. So Namibia, we believe, because we listen more to international partners and the trade partners from the West, okay, let's have laws in order. But when you go and look for the actual developments on the ground that should appease the everyday Namibians' concerns, let's for example say, oil and gas exploration, power to X and the synthetic chemicals and synthetic fuels discussion, green hydrogen management and production, and the relevant legislation around safety, community benefits, and so on. Those things are now currently under the pipeline. But when we started these discussions, all of these discussions, green hydrogen and oil and gas, we should have begun in 2020. Meaning, already sensitized the other lawmakers, the other political parties. Say, hey, listen, guys. We want to take Namibia forward. The opportunity is there. We will
bring forward as an executive of this country to you, the legislative of this country, so that we start a process. Let's, for example, also take something like Namibia's genocide. Now, at, I don't know when in this year the joint declaration will come to the fore, but now it's coming back. Since State of the Nation address in April, we're supposed to see now a return of the debate in this in this time frame. That is also a discussion, Amun, but it was purposefully ignored for 30 something years. Purposefully, I put there purposefully. I'm not going to indicate fingers and stuff like that, but we can clearly see Namibia was dragging feet. I'm saying Namibia collectively because we voted for many of the people in between who just dragged their feet. People can say whatever they want. Defenders of some political parties can say whatever they want. But me, myself, and you probably in terms of, you know, heritage on your side, Helmut, you can also be an impacted person of this chapter of Namibian colonial history. But when you see there's a purposeful avoidance, body language is avoidance, then you know, in the scenario that presented itself, that it seems like this is a discussion that is not being properly broached and people wish to push it one side. Now, on the level of, and that's the other comment that I love making, on the level of citing the caliber of politicians in terms of being in the parliament, whether past or now currently, conversations should technically be about advancing Namibia. Yes, let's have all conversations. Let's have them all. There's nothing wrong with that. But let's also basically look at things that has to help us get into the digital realms. Things that have to provide the necessary protections for Namibians. Things that sees how we put Namibian interests before we go and say yes to AFCFTA. And then we don't want to open up borders because technically AFCFTA feeds
Open border discussion.
The open border discussion by Pan-Africanists. But you can clearly see that Namibians don't like, even everyday Namibians, they don't like that open border discussion, which is literally a dilemma because we are saying yes as a nation to AFCFTA, but we are saying no to the free movement of people, which is a protocol which you and I dissected. And further on, you continue getting this mixed messaging discussion taking place, which is also the mixed messaging example that I gave you of the what's the thing's name? The argument I had with the person about YouTube shorts and TikTok.
Yeah, the difference between.
Yeah, the difference between. Well, I said it's the same thing because it comes from the same technology. And the person says, no, it's two different companies. Yes, it's two different companies, but it's the same thing. It's the exact same technology. Now, a long story short, because I took you all into Korejas and then all the way to Katima. Long story short, when we have to look at the aspect of like these digital IDs and what they're supposed to do, here's now where things come with a curveball. The curveball is that act that you and I loved talk, or that I loved referencing last year, the Digital Transactions Act, which I assumed it was just purely a Bank of Namibia Act. The act designates CRAN as an implementer of this digital ID or EID, whatever ID thing situation. It's a headache and a conundrum because you and I know we don't have a data protection law. We don't have a cybersecurity law. We've got a cyber response task force or team who CRAN loves saying is empowered by a bill. You and I know a bill is not law. A bill does not allow any judge or any court to entertain any arrest or any particular appearance of any note or any indication of whoever transgressed what. Meaning, an actual hacker can come and sit in Namibia at a cafe in his pajamas, in his or her pajamas. They can commit all manner of hacking and cyber attacks.
I mean,
because there's no law that will basically lock them up.
Well, thanks to technology, you can do that in the when you're sitting in your royal palace somewhere in Nigeria.
No, but that's why I'm telling you, Hamid, that the guy can commit the act
here
in public, in Namibia.
Yeah.
He can take his laptop. He can bring down and DDoS and attack any server in Namibia because he knows CRAN does not have an act to work on. He can break any law.
So whether we're looking at it on a...
you know...
Now that you brought that up, I can't help but think about, you know, the whole Sudan discussion.
Yeah.
Which... how is it, you know, the African Union, let alone Namibia, how can the African Union or Namibia address the, you know, the Sudan issue? Because the ongoing debate that that came out of the, you know, the 2005 dismissing of the Sudan case by the International Court of Justice was the whole discussion around around a reservation of of treaties. Now the Genocide Convention, the UAE is a signatory to the Genocide Convention, but they reserved some sections of the treaty. Reserving a treaty is a fancy way of saying that it's like you say, you know, going to the Ministry of Ministry of Justice and telling them that, you know what, I am a Namibian. Yeah. I subscribe to Namibian to the Namibian Constitution, except this and this and this and this chapter, and then they allow you to do that. Now,
but you and I know you can't just say I don't want this law, but I'll adhere to this law.
Yeah, because now the problem they were facing when Sudan took that case to the to the ICJ was that they realized that actually, the UAE was, had reservations to the Genocide Conventions, and part of the reservations that they made was, in the event of any, basically, prosecution, the court does not have jurisdiction to prosecute them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but that was for the, which court was it?
The ICJ, International Court of Justice.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, right now, one of the biggest debate in reference to reservation of treaties is that the Genocide Convention and the collision it has with the Vienna Convention on Treaties, because the Vienna Convention is the one, the Vienna Convention on Treaties is the one that allows a reservation of treaties, but it has one condition. Reservations are not supposed to be allowed according to the Vienna Convention if the reservation is going to impact the court's the purpose of the treaty. Now the purpose of the Genocide Convention is to prosecute genocide. If you remove jurisdiction from prosecution, then you don't have anything. That brings us to who basically sat there and thought this was a brilliant idea. Now so until that part is ironed out, which is very technical, very, very stupidly technical.
Yeah.
Now, the African Union that can barely settle dispute between DRC and Rwanda, now going to all of a sudden become a dispute resolution expert to solve the case that the ICJ couldn't.
Yeah. But
talk about jokes.
But here's a funny thing, Amut. Let's for example look at a scenario in terms of that obviously plays within this understanding of financial inclusion and stuff like that. I'm bringing it down because it's a good example that you highlighted.
Actually, excellent. You point that out because was that last week when the Secretary General of the UN pointed out that, first of all, before the Secretary General of the UN said, talked about how, the extractive industry is, can easily be blamed for a lot of armed conflicts going on. And this is where you're seeing, a lot of armed groups basically, taking over power and then taking over, all these mining sites.
Because it is so public, Helmut. Immediately see how, and this is the thing that, for example, like in Namibia, the mining sector's particular dilemma. Not to say in Namibia, but in Namibia primarily, they do have an important role to play.
Yeah.
We have to acknowledge, we do need mining. Né?
Yeah.
But the biggest concern has been how people and the what's that word? The perception around mining, yeah, specifically for rural communities in Namibia. Now, in the mining scenario, what we've seen so far around the world, is we look at it in multiple, meaning multiple cross-sectional, or what is that word? That the across,
cross-section, overlapping.
Not just overlapping, but there's another word, man. The president also used it last year in her inauguration speech.
We had to feud before.
Yeah, but with the Tufu report, she said, you can see how mining has a cross-cutting. So, mining has got such a intense cross-cutting contribution at every level of society. Yeah, there might be a landowner, or there might be a very powerful executive in that company.
Yeah.
Then you look at the labor force, and you look at a unit.
Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short. When you're talking, it's a short story long. Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Hold on, just let me finish my story. As I was saying,
my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my chassis is getting warm.
Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. 28 minutes left to the hour of 6. This is a home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And a quick and gentle reminder. Today we're only going up to 6.
Yeah.
Because, from 6 to 7, China Corner takes over. And China Corner is back if you want to be in touch of what Dwight has been busy with. In China Corner department.
Yeah.
Before the commercial break snack bonus.
So where I left off specifically, if we have to look at, for example, the impact that the extractive industry has had specifically like in conflict zones.
Yeah.
The evidence, and you're right, Guterres also mentioned it, but it has been so obvious for long.
Yeah.
Now we are just seeing it because that's what the internet technologies have done. We are now able to communicate when atrocities, when negative actions are taking place, yeah, negative impacts are captured on video by concerned community members and citizens and so on and so forth. And it helps with bringing to the light specifically activities that take place.
Yeah.
Now, I like such scenarios because you get an honest indication of negative behavior versus what the overall, let's say, policy direction. Let's say, let's use Namibia. Let's say what NDP6 wants to achieve. Now, In many cases, you will never hear me first shout from the top of my lungs that a company is bad. You will never hear that, Helmut, because I've worked in private sector long enough. And
you know the pain that comes with running one.
Well, okay, not the running part. Mm-hmm. No, not the running part. But you get to understand your role in a corporation or in an enterprise, a private enterprise, in terms of this thing needs to make money. Because if you've ever thought to yourself, what happens to a company if you don't make money for a day?
Oh.
I've been in such situations.
Yeah.
The higher ups didn't like that scenario that the bosses that I had at those times. And it was usually, for example, like your invoicing system. The system that literally captures your data of activities that basically defines how much money you make, how much of a product you had sold, and it basically helps to formulate your data planning discussion when necessary, when your management has to meet.
Yeah.
Now, and this is just an invoicing system, Helmut. This is an invoicing system. It's got a very basic role. But when we cite, for example, like conflict scenarios that take place in a community setting, that's why I love that UIS lithium mining report the most, because
that's a piece of gold.
It's not just that report. It's the Auditor General's report on the gold mining. Remember about the Trust Me Bro scenario from the Directorate of Mining
Fisheries Observer report.
Because we could see for 10 years what happened in 10 years when reporting didn't take place. We knew that another activity was taking place there.
Not only did they reshuffle information from the previous year to bring into the, finance from the
previous financial year into this financial
into
year.
This one in terms of reporting, but they did, like, everything was, that's my favorite Afrikaans word, Dier Mekaar.
Yeah, because it literally was Dier Mekaar.
And the Auditor General was like, well, I'll just write what you guys provided.
Yeah. And then, you go look at that other report of the previous Ministry of Agriculture, what is its role in terms of delivering on the SDGs, specifically for environmental safety and for advancing agricultural needs. Wonderful, wonderful positions to take, because the hypothesis is straightforward. Now, in any scenario, I am including agriculture because it's an extractive exercise. I'm including fisheries because it's an extractive exercise. I'm citing the two mining aspects because it's extractive. Mm-hmm. In all three of them, Helmut, there's a common denominator, and you know it. You also saw it. But we actually identified it greatly in the UIS lithium mine report. Miscommunication, broken telephone, not adequately collecting the data, not verifying the data, so that you know that data integrity is maintained through every stage of the fundamental process, that whoever needs to collect the data knows that their job is done.
That's an excellent thought process. You see, if you start it from the term that was used by the Office of the Auditor General's report was in reference to the Minister of Mines and Minister of Agriculture. And
They didn't use Trust Me, Bro. That was
not the Trust Me. The Trust Me, Bro, is we came up with that in reference to the Minister of Mines. Yeah. But the environment and agriculture, that was how the two, the solution they have to their problems, especially the Minister of Agriculture seeks to solve one of the issues that we obviously seek to solve, food insecurity as a country, is through initiatives being conducted by the Minister of Agriculture or overseen by the Minister of Agriculture.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the fertilizer or some of the things that been used in our attempt to solve food insecurity being used in the Minister of Agriculture initiative is in a long term going to cause problems for the Minister of Environment. Now you can start it from there. But it's much more exciting when you look at it. Especially the miscommunication part from the extractive industry, because you have be it fishing, where you have about 9-10 years of information blackout, and that's on purpose. That's on purpose. You can't tell me that's an accident. And you have a report that came out after that.
Yeah.
It's just one hodgepodge of information that didn't seem to belong together, at least not in a clear, you know, not in a clear enough way. So you have that part of information, and you have the vessels that are supposed to be patrolling our seas to ensure that not just the safety of our borders, but the safety of the species which also belong to Namibia that are residing within this within these waters.
Yeah.
So they didn't do their job for almost if not over a year. So you have a lot of gaps that we really have to pull our socks in, especially when it comes to the extractive industry, especially mining and fishing. And you have a lot of information that is either conflicting or just a total blackout of information, especially in the fishing industry. But now, if you compare the Fisheries Observer Fund report and the gold one. The gold one is the one that gave us the trust me bro information.
Exactly.
And you have the Fisheries Observer one that first of all went on vacation for 10 years vacation and then came out
vacation is a loose term.
I'm telling you, 10 years vacation, and when it came back with so much hangover that had mixed up information.
Yeah.
So, all this, if you ask me, are the questions that we're supposed to be looking for answers to.
Mm.
Now, I'm not saying the digital inclusion discussion is not an important one to have. The point I'm making is we have a cart in front of the horse.
Yeah. I don't know what the horse is doing, but the cart is definitely in front of him.
Definitely. And the cart is, the horse is finding it hard to move because we have a cart in front.
Mm.
Like you just pointed out, we have, we're adopting first world developed country type of initiatives and crossing our fingers and hoping it just, out of the blue starts working. Mm. And I believe one of the excellent example of this, I would argue, would be the whole Peugeot discussion. We just woke up and decided, a textile, that's for losers. We just go straight to automotive. Mm. Yeah, how'd that go?
Yeah. Connecting that back now to our financial inclusion scenario. The interesting thing, Helmut, is that I don't believe, the NSA basically reaffirms what is a fact.
Yeah.
We now know how to make money move a lot more in the Namibian society.
Yeah.
What we need is how to use the money. However,
they don't have to acquire the money first.
We have to, but we can. But they take stock of remittances.
Yeah,
and it's way above 50%. So, if it's above 50%, ignore it.
Yeah,
because remittances are happening. Remittances will just become stronger.
Yeah,
remittances is basically doesn't matter who's earning the money. If you make the money move through the various cell phone banking and cell phone technologies that are now prevalent,
yeah,
stand back. The money is moving.
Yeah,
where we have a concern specifically was our first hypothesis. What financial inclusion technically would mean, or what should it reflect in?
Yeah.
Should it be a society, Helmut, that is not dependent, for example, on buying expensive consumer durable goods, like an expensive house, like an expensive car, like having to travel, have to spend a lot of money on travel to get to a destination, where there is a lack of faith, a lack of trust in certain parts of our economy for Namibians to feel secure about the Namibian economy. Now, it brings us back to that thing, the Sovereign Wealth Fund and the Basic Income Grant dimensions that I mentioned at the start with our introduction.
Yeah.
If that Sovereign Wealth Fund, because we still don't have the act, but the thing is functional. Now, it supports your first explanation about the East versus West discussion about how politics should be working.
Yeah.
Now, why in the one thing that Namibia does without an act, we didn't complain? We did not complain. No Namibian complained. No Namibian even interrogated, where's the act for this stupid sovereign wealth fund? No one complained.
We just want the money, Baba. If I'm getting the money, you know, you can just figure out the legislations, even if some of the money is going to iPhones with the two SIM cards.
No, that's a waste. But yeah, here's the thing.
Definitely a waste.
But here's the thing. Let's, for example, say that sovereign wealth fund accumulates now so much money specifically that every year they do the Alaska fund thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pay out an amount for every Namibian from a certain age. A specific amount. And even if it's a 3,000 on top of your annual living expenses, it would make a significant change in every Namibian's life, whether you earn a salary or you don't earn a salary, whether you're the president or you just turned 19 today. It does contribute in some way to your life. Now, here's the scenario. That would take financial inclusion to another level.
Now I'll sit here to promote financial inclusion like my bank account depends on it. Because at that point, it will depend on it.
Yes.
Now I'm like, okay, yeah, financial inclusion. Let's move money more. But before we start talking about moving money, I'm not a financial expert, but aren't we supposed to start with getting the money first before talking about moving it?
There is money already in the sovereign wealth fund. There is money already, Ahmed.
Okay. Aren't we supposed to get it into the right accounts, like mine and ours? Ours and subsequently Namib Ruaris.
As of April, it currently stands at $478 million Namibian dollars. 478. We are 3 million Namibians. Now
that doesn't sound like a lot of money. For 3 million Namibians.
It's a lot. But let's say we just take 100 million of that 400.
Yeah.
Let me just take it out and we divide that by
3. Oh, million. 400 million. Oh, look, I had 4 million. Okay. 400 million. Actually, well, it's enough. Now that we are in July and December is getting close. What?
Okay. Nobody wants... Nobody wants 33 Namibian dollars. Or 66 Namibian dollars.
Nah.
Okay, but let's say we take the amount of Namibians quoted here, not the full 3 million. Let's say we take 1.5 million of those Namibians. That's 200 million divided by 1.5 million. Yeah.
Using what criteria?
It's 133 Namibians just as a once-off payment.
133 Namibian dollars?
Yeah. Literally,
understand. No, just keep, you know, just keep.
Let it grow.
Yeah, let it grow. That's why I'm saying, you know, just, you know, let it grow. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Because the bank charge will swallow that 130.
They're all gone.
That's a swipe at the wrong place. So, yeah. But if you even make it like a conditional scenario, let's say you target like a specific bracket from the labor force report. The people that earn 1,000 or 2,000.
Yeah.
Let's say it's, 700,000 of those Namibians? That's at least 285 Namibian dollars. Aish, that's... Yeesh.
Nah.
Yeesh. It's not even worth it. Mm-mm. So, yeah. I mean, for us to play with that idea of the 3,000, that I mentioned.
Yeah.
At least the 3,000 Namibian dollars. For us to play with that 3,000... multiplied by 1.5 million people, that would be 4.5 billion.
Yeah.
Alone. And that's just a once-off payment.
Yeah.
That's 4.5 billion. That's a ministry's budget.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
Yep.
Yeah. When that oil and gas decision happens...
Oh yeah!
I hope universal basic income grant is the first thing we think about. Want to have a double cap. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. Don't you want a double cap, Ahmed? Even if you don't have a license. Okay, let me assume you have a license. I'm sorry, guys. I don't want to expose Ahmed like that. Let's say We imagine you've got your license.
No, I'm thinking a double cap.
Or do you want to buy a whole 18-wheeler truck?
No, you know, that's not how high I am.
To flaunt it. You want to be like those two UAE guys, those two Arab guys going, technology!
Yeah.
Who's busy testing the technology in that SUV.
Yeah, in the desert. And, illegal only when police there. When police not there, I be everything illegal. Don't skip Arab videos.
those guys are ridiculous. But yeah. Those guys are ridiculous. But yeah.
Yeah.
If we start from that indication.
Right? Look, for me, I think the whole financial inclusion discussion and the numbers, you know, it's a good thing that the NSA is basically at the top of their game with regards to compiling all this information in this type of reports.
Mm.
But, because it's generating the discussion of at least from, you can imagine how different Namibians are interpreting this information. Like, okay, digital transformation, move money more, move money more, because the more the money is moving, the more you are basically, that's good for the economy.
Mm.
But before we start talking about figuring out the most efficient ways to move money, aren't we supposed to talk about first how to acquire this money? I think, things like sovereign wealth fund for Africa. The UN Secretary General, Undersecretary, and the head of the Economic Commission for Africa, Gatete, pointed out the very same financial concern that the SADC anti-corruption representatives discussed earlier this month or last month.
Mm.
Illicit financial transfer is Africa's biggest problem. Now, I like how, it's one of the Africa's biggest financial problem. No, I like how SADC, pushed it a step further because they are basically, these are a group of public representatives.
Yeah.
So they approached it from a public, from a public sector standpoint. One thing they pointed out was, the public procurement space is one of the, for at least from a public sector point of view,
yeah,
is one of the biggest, source of illicit financing.
Yeah.
Now, here's the problem. When you look at it from either from a SADC or an African standpoint, you begin to realize that we could solve a lot of problems if we kept a tight leash on how money is moving on the continent, because much of it is living through your leaders buying iPhones with two SIM cards.
Definitely. Yes.
Yeah, it's all this money. Take, for example, was that the Equatorial Guinea son? I believe he's now the vice president.
Yeah, he was the guy that was arrested by the French police in Paris.
It's things like that. That's
and
the
then he was released.
That's the big. Was it the same guy who's the Swiss authorities had to auction about? I think three or four or five of his cars.
Yeah,
that is Africa's biggest problem.
And the accusation that was leveled against him was extravagant living.
And that's true for all African
countries. And he was the minister of oil or the minister of oil and gas.
Angola had the same problem. Namibia has the same problem. Mozambique. And let's not take away Senegal's spotlight.
South Africa is the cleanest one.
South Africa?
Yeah, surprisingly.
Rent manipulation.
Oh, that's what I know. But South Africa, surprisingly,
is
the one that doesn't have a similar issue. Like the examples you just listed.
Yeah. You know, one thing I like about South Africa, in the way that they are, people steal money. Mm. When they are not buying Italian blue Lambos, they are stashing that money in the sofas.
Three different cars. Three different Lambos.
In the same color. And your favorite color is blue.
I don't know how. And a Lambos is 2 million each, ne?
Yeah.
It's 2 to 3 million each. How much money did he steal to have three Lambos? And to live in a specific suburb of South Africa. Do you know, it's so nice that to steal money in the same country and you still live in that same country. Other people would have been hartloop weg.
Yeah, look, that's why my favorite financial heist on this continent is the Palapala bank robbery. Those guys
were clever.
Those guys that just brought money straight back home.
Yeah.
And then you have those of you that are taking money to iPhones with two SIM cards. And
that's the lowest you want to achieve. iPhones with two SIM cards.
Like, are you
that's
that
your
cheap?
Highest level. iPhones with two SIM cards.
Although to be fair, in the documentary, is also negotiating for his, $200,000 in arrears for expenses for his farm. You know, if you can settle that, you know, don't worry, the fish is all yours. Horse mackerel, you know, sardines, you can have it all. I learned you can learn a lot of negotiation skills. At least just make sure you're not doing it in front of a camera.
You know what's the worst part of that thing that you mentioned? Is that the debt will come up in future.
What do you mean?
It was a debt associated mm-hmm. to the farm.
Yeah.
The debt will come back. You will accumulate the debt again.
What if it's being paid by some Icelandic guy who you are giving all the fish?
Helmut? That's not how the private sector works. Because it's in your name,
mm-hmm.
you will continuously pay for this thing. Yeah. You will continuously make loans on this thing or for this thing for
yeah.
a farm.
Yeah.
It will come back, the debt. That's why I couldn't. When you sit there thinking, you go like, brah, some of us need really financial literacy training in some cases.
Look,
even if it's just to be devious, ne? But how is it that the world's biggest corporation?
Huh? Do you read that?
I'm gonna read it now. But how is it that the world's biggest corporation uses the same laws that we ignore, or the same logical thinking that we ignore to deploy in our daily lives, basically, and then we go and call them corrupt, and they say, "Nah, I'm complying with all laws."
Yeah.
Or I signed a direct agreement that gives me an exemption, as long as it does not sort of like take away my responsibilities in other scenarios, I'm complying. That's why I don't listen to political journalists anymore. Just saying. But anyway, quickly taking an ad break, and we come back right after this. Velvita University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse, Midwife or Accoucheur, Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy, Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences, Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing, Level 8. Master of Public Health and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvica University, where everyone is an achiever. Yeah, let me not fold up that document. Yeah, it needs to, you know.
Dwight?
Yeah.
Quick break.
Lipura nenge no wapubwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka okone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honora Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Matatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, the Eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events. And Basically, any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the Eye.
Welcome back. So, financial inclusion, information gathering, shout out to the NSA. Information while compiling and publishing and all that, again, shout out to the NSA. Let's just talk about the elephant.
A lot of shout outs there to the NSA. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Help. Let's, you know.
Well, I technically also treasure them, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I like to point at that so that when they screw up, I'll have an excuse to cook them because, you know, I don't want them to start saying, oh, you know what, we do all kinds of good things, but you guys don't point it out. And I'm like, yeah. So I just decided.
You do. Did I tell you that I know someone that studied with me on university who works there for the NSA? And funny enough, they listen to us. So go ahead, do the cooking. You know, on both sides, remember.
Right.
You've got to bri on both sides, Hamoud. Remember. Right. I want it well done.
My friend and sister works for them. What do you want me to do?
Continue with the cooking. Continue. Keep it.
Yeah,
up.
And she cooks a lot of delicious food. I don't want her to tell me. You know, when I visit them, it's like, so it's you guys.
Yeah, continue with the cooking. Continue.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's the consultations. You know, the consultations. Let me just say the gathering of information and the reports and everything. Excellent.
Mm.
But I still, you know, I'm still going to maintain that we have the cart in front of the horse,
yeah.
Which I think before we start talking about figuring out the best way to move money so that we can boost the economy, we first have to, put money in people's pockets. Like,
yeah.
There's this other guy. I totally forgot that guy's name who is running for mayor in Michigan. That's, you know, that's his motto. Money in whose pocket? And everyone is singing along, money in your pocket. I'm like, I've heard that before. That was Edgar Lungu back in, in Zambia. You know, in 2017, when I was in Zambia, that was the running joke, especially amongst, those of us that were non-Zambians. We were laughing at a lot of these guys. Just in the middle of a conversation, we were talking about, they were like, oh, you know what? There are a little bit of challenges here and there in the economy. The moment the discussion became economic, we're like, okay, so, and usually you just find a lot of people that, have different point of views, and sooner or later you will run into someone that will point at either the political party that's in charge and sometimes the president.
Yeah.
So one guy goes like, this president is just not fulfilling his promises. You know, he said, he was running on the campaign promise of money, money in the pocket. Oh, boy, did we go technical with that statement. Like, he said money in the pocket. He wasn't specific as to whose pocket. So you're always supposed to ask.
This is the kind of poster that tries to speak towards helping professionals with financial literacy.
Helping who?
They say in the pro poster, helping professionals with financial literacy.
Yeah. Teach learners financial literacy.
Is it learners or teachers? Teachers.
To teach learners financial literacy.
Oh.
Yeah, financial literacy, to teach learners financial literacy. My only problem is teachers and pretty much every adult who is living in survival mode is too broke to give financial education at this point.
That's the exact reason I'm getting to it, because this poster that we cited here as an inside joke, guys, which is technically forming part of our discussion, speaks towards training for people to teach learners about financial literacy, but in many cases, you just have to look at social media and you see the memes and the jokes about how many months does January have.
The person you are training to go and teach is broke.
Yeah, or the person you're training literally
actually
has
not
no direction of budgeting.
Actually, they have a job, they have a
but they don't have a budget. They're just going wild.
Yeah.
And not only are they borrowing themselves into oblivion, they sort of like doing this something that I have just recently come to learn that it's a significant part of you know of corporate financing in terms of borrowing money from there to pay debt here. But I think we are abusing that because you now have I think that's the difference between borrowing for consumption and borrowing for investment, because I think the very basic question anyone is required to ask themselves before going to borrow money is, how am I going to pay this money back?
Yeah,
look, it's a very rational
plus
question.
Plus interest.
Can I afford to pay it back? Because, once you start asking yourself questions along those lines, you'll find that you'll be humbled by your bank account. You start living within your means. Because you know that if you borrow above this point, it's either you will have to, find a cozy place somewhere under the bridge for the next 2 months for you to pay that off. But that's not going to cut it. Yeah. So, financial literacy is brilliant. But like it was pointed out, by the 2013, Ministry of Finance, analysis on financial literacy in Namibia. We have the theoretical financial literacy. It's the discipline that comes with practicing that theory. That's the problem. And this is something that I believe it's a universal issue in terms of handling money. Yeah. You have, a lot of people that are basically trying to balance what they earn versus what they would like, the type of lifestyle they would like to live. And this is now creating a lot of issues, especially for those of you that, chill. Chilling is, that's something that I just learned, I believe 2-3 years ago. Chilling is expensive.
Yes, Hamoud. That's if there's only one sponsor in that equation.
Yeah.
That's why you don't sponsor.
It was around 4 PM. We are getting into one of this establishment, and there's a, very muscular guy at the gate. It's like, entrance fee. Like, entrance what now? So $50. So I turned to my homeboy, he's a, seasoned, well-trained chiller. And it's like, the later it gets, the more the price actually goes up.
Yeah, just for us guys.
Oh.
Just for us men. If we're there, the ladies come.
Isn't it supposed to be the other way around?
Yes, it is.
Like,
yes,
if they're there, we're gonna follow
suit. Yes and no. But it's one of the reasons specifically why, well, let's say like the lack of dating taking place in North America and Europe specifically, where the guys don't go out anymore because they realize the men have to pay for a door charge. The ladies get in for free. But if we're talking about gender rights and gender equality, at a basic thing like a nightclub, why am I paying at the gate, but the ladies get to go in for free?
Gender equality, huh?
And then it's me that have to buy the drinks inside.
And they are ridiculously expensive.
Rubbish story.
Overpriced.
I almost use my Afrikaans dictionary, my Afrikaans vocabulary. Rubbish story, Hamoud. I technically understand what the red pillars are about regarding the dating scene.
Yeah.
But that's a nightclub is a different example. It's an entertainment scenario. It's a clever trick that nightclub owners and bar owners use, because they know they need to attract the men who buy the drinks, not the ladies. If you get the men to pay to cover most of your other operating costs, the ladies just come, or there will be guys bringing the ladies along. But as long as both genders are there, you know that you can technically manipulate and abuse one in order for the other one to be there as an add-on, eye candy, please, the situation.
There's some serious psychological warfare at work here.
Yeah, it's even more devious than the campaigns that you and I spoke about, like the breakfast campaign, the Marlboro campaign, the other campaigns, yeah, it's
this one, it goes
and it's, and it even works in Namibia, but the template that has worked throughout, specifically like with bars,
yeah,
is if there's no door charge and you just bring people to have a good time, they will spend money. If you take away that charge at the door,
yeah,
and you allow people to come in, it's just be decently dressed,
yeah,
and don't come and cause trouble. That's the only two conditions. That the your income inside, in terms of what you can observe, will immediately multiply by tenfold.
Now, imagine where financial inclusion, you know, imagine that practice in a country where the financial inclusivity discussion starts with sovereign wealth fund.
Look,
the implementation of that is going to give a lot of Namibians one heck of a... look, if
as as long as I get my money that equates to a double cap, I'll be happy.
You know what? You know what? I think if I was to advise the president when the money is enough for a sovereign wealth fund, I would say, Madam or Sir, wait until January. Give them that money in January because, well, we all know, speaking as a professional broke veteran in January, I can tell you, I can tell you.
That if you're a veteran, then I'm the pensioner.
Okay, China.
On that note, guys, let's see each other again, same time, same place tomorrow.
Yeah.